the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. Yesterday I talked about the opposites, being familiar with one another, being brought into familiar relationship by being brought together into the stillness of the heart, the stillness of meditation. There's a lovely verse, part of a verse in the teachings on reharmonization with the eternal that says, enlightened people cleanse their hearts with this stillness. Another kind of striking way to think of it is that, you know those things called bolas? Has two like stones or balls, heavy weights on at the ends of a cord, and there's gauchos down in Argentina, you know, swing them around. I think they, if you didn't know what you're doing, you could really bean yourself good. And they chase the game with them and kind of entangle them. Well, if you imagine like the opposites, like swinging around in our heads like that, these two dangerous, potentially dangerous heavy balls, you know, swinging around on this cord. And when we're still in meditation, when we sit still, let our heart, spiritual heart, collect itself, and we stop spreading ourselves and gather together, allow coalescence in the hara, allow everything to draw together into the hara. Then it's like these two balls fall down side by side, just hang together side by side. The opposites draw close together and still in the stillness, the hara. See? Now, of course, that's a very appealing goal, if you think about it. Because it's because we get caught up in the opposites that we do the things that create suffering, do the actions that have the consequences of suffering. It's because we get caught up in the opposites that we blind ourselves to the true reality. Yet however appealing the goal is, how we go after that goal matters very, very much. If we go after that goal from a willful standpoint, from a driver's seat standpoint, then we're in the opposites, caught in the opposites, and trying to get out of the opposites. And this is a classic case of compounding delusion by following ideals. You want to get out of the opposites. You know you're caught in the opposites. So you strive with the goal of getting out of the opposites. And the very striving itself keeps you in the opposites. Frequently people do this, replace or pile of spiritual delusion on top of a worldly one. So how do we avoid this difficulty? It's why Dogen spoke of the goal of goallessness. That's why I remember Master so often said, just do the next thing that needs to be done. It's why we meditate. Enlightened people cleanse their hearts with stillness, not with striving. Enlightened people cleanse their hearts with stillness, not with striving. One has to let go of all sense of a goal and just do the training for the sake of the training. You know, it's very easy for people to get confused about that teaching of training for the sake of training. Like, if you train for the sake of training, then really such things as kensho obviously don't exist then, because the training itself is the goal. But Dogen never said that. Dogen had a kensho, probably more than one. His master confirmed it. There's this famous story in Zen of Dogen's kensho. Do you remember how it goes? I think someone next to Dogen on the tan was dozing off, and Nyojo, who was famously not afraid to let the monks have it, in his old age, he didn't have the energy anymore to clobber him. He used to go around and whack him with his slipper, if I remember correctly. And he told them this, I just don't have the energy to do this anymore. And the monks wept. The monks wept. Anyway, he let someone have it right next to Dogen. I don't remember what he said, but he yelled at him. You know, what are you, you're wasting your time dozing there, you know, when you're, you know, facing the issue of birth and death, you know, it's a crisis of birth and death, something along those lines. And Dogen, sitting next to him, was enlightened. That's so often the way it happens. I had a kensho. It's perhaps better to say I had a kensho. Had his first great experience of the eternal, let's put it that way. Genuine leaping beyond the opposites. I think what Nyojo said was something about, you know, how can you ever drop off body and mind when you're sitting there dozing? And Dogen, at that point, body and mind dropped away. What is meant by body and mind dropping away? Which is just, you know, letting go completely and falling into the arms of the eternal. And knowing it. So, anyway, Nyojo helped Dogen have his first great experience of the immaculacy of nothingness. So Dogen wasn't denying that such things happen when he talked about training for the sake of training. He just knew that spiritual greed compounded on top of other greed is still just greed. Let go of the striving, let go of the demanding, let go of the insisting, let go of the clinging. And what's left? Well, when sitting, just sit. When cutting the vegetables, just cut the vegetables. When driving, just drive. When eating, just eat. When sleeping, just sleep. Just keep your focus right in the present. Let go of the past. Don't worry about the future. Live in the present. The effort of doing that is precisely the effort of meditation. And of course, we talk about many other aspects of it too. because, you know, that's really living with an open heart. That's living looking up, making the effort to look up rather than down. In other words, it's possible to speak of it in a kind of more technical sounding way that emphasizes the effort to stay in the moment. And it's very easy for people to get confused by that and forget that it's actually a religion. And there's a lot more to that staying in the moment than, you know, those kind of dry instructions on how to meditate, how to practice mindfulness seem to indicate. It's not so easy to not keep going over the past in one's head. It's not so easy to not worry about the future. Why? Because we're struggling to find true faith within our own hearts. Because of all the self-doubt, all the fear, all the grief, all the confusion, all the resentment. That's why it's a religion. And above all, it's a religion because we need the help of something greater than ourselves to get precisely out of that loop of ourselves trying to be God and compounding delusion, compounding greed. You can't find God and reharmonize with God by trying to be God. Your master, as I've so often said, used to say, the first step in religion is to get down out of God's seat. And another way of putting it is the first step in religion is actually not meditation. The first step in religion is bowing. Because that's what bowing means. In its inception, it means getting down out of God's seat. Bowing begins with a please help me and culminates in a thank you. Asking and gratitude. Humility and gratitude. So if we think of a little bola metaphor, while our effort is misdirected towards a goal to get rid of the suffering, to accomplish, somehow realize enlightenment, to become a better person, whatever that goal is, while our effort is warped by that goal orientation, however sincerely we're trying, we're keeping those dangerous weights at the end of the cord, those dangerous balls, we're keeping them spinning. We're keeping them spinning. And we're yanked hither and there, here and there. In religion, when people do this, they'll try everything they can think of, turn every religious practice into some technique for opening the doors magically. Turn every aspect of religious practice into some way of trying to accomplish what they're striving to accomplish. And that inevitably leads to some form of asceticism. Because asceticism is really just trying to use religion or the forms of religion, aspects of religion, to get the goal one has in mind. And the heart harder one tries, the further one pushes it away. That's not to say there's no effort needed. Of course there's effort needed, considerable effort needed in training. But it's not the effort to accomplish any of those things. It's the effort to continually come back to taking refuge in our own heart. To continually come back to that present moment. To continually offer up and let go of external things. To continually be content with what is here right now and not ask for, much less demand more. The goal of goallessness. Enlighten people, cleanse their hearts with stillness. Your spiritual center is always still. Meditation is just taking refuge in that place within. You also can't will stillness to happen when things are banging around, when those opposites are banging around in your head. And just by the effort of meditating, keep coming back to when you're sitting on that cushion or on that chair, however you meditate, or that bench, coming back to just fully being present, sitting there being present. Your mind's off again, come back a million times, getting caught and coming back, getting caught and coming back. But what happens is the natural stillness of the heart then gradually pervades all that rattling around and banging around, and things quieten. That's why so often you experience, at least I so often, a thousand times have experienced sitting down to meditate and being in an agitated or a more agitated frame of mind when I sat down, or being emotionally upset about something, but getting up much more peaceful and centered. If you try to force that peacefulness to come, you're just, again, just driving it away. If you sit down and just get your position right, take a few deep breaths, and do the same old thing again, and things will settle down with time. That's the larger part of the work of the cleansing in our part of the work. It's a larger part of our part of the work of the cleansing and conversion of karma. And rightly understood, all the precepts are within that effort. Because non-preceptual thought, words, and deed are being really caught in the banging around of the opposites and perpetuating them. Matthew used to say, the problem is it's so boring so much of the time. And for many people that is a problem. I've said and thought many times in recent years, boredom is one of the least appreciated commodities there is. And one comes to appreciate the periods when there isn't some drama going on, but it's just kind of business as usual. People have often remarked, some of you have remarked to me, that you note how much Western people and Americans in particular, we're so impatient for results. We're so impatient for results. I note this in myself a lot, in lots of areas where I'm doing things, how easily I get impatient. That impatience is just the result of being driver's seaty about things. So it's always possible, it's always an option when just nothing seems to be working out. It's always an option just to actually stop and be still. We always have a default position as meditators that we can go to. You know, you're stuck in traffic, you're trying to get home before the storm hits or whatever, you're stuck in traffic, you always have a default position to let go of the goal and just be still, breathe in and out, relax, and just take it a moment at a time. That commonly experienced, commonly practiced default position that really every meditator knows or has done. There's a lot more to that than meets the eye. And you really learn this when you come one day to where you have to continually return for refuge to the letting go of everything. I call that the zero reset, to really just being on hands and knees spiritually, letting go of everything. Where Master Mokigen puts it really beautifully, resting on the floor of the ocean. Resting on the floor of the ocean. Resting in the palm of the hand of the cosmic Buddha. Letting go of everything. Lots of seemingly little daily life letting go. Or preparing the way for that to happen one day. And when you're in the place where you have to do that, it's a really, you have to do it to survive the process you're going through. You have to do it. And the fact that there is that zero reset is the greatest comfort there is at that time. Reverend Master says it so beautifully in Lotus Blossom, nothing matters. Nothing matters. That's zero reset. In that place of resting on the floor of the ocean, resting in the palm of the hand of the cosmic Buddha, in that place of nothing matters, let go of everything and just look up. In that place, then, when one is really training in that place and living in that place, then the opposites stop flailing around and come together side by side in harmony with one another. And they greet one another and meet one another and are at rest with one another in stillness. Then the Eternal says, oh, right, now I can get a word in edgeways with these things, banging around, rattling around. I couldn't be heard before. And then the teaching about the real nature of existence, what is truly real and what is not, flows through our very being and is experienced with our whole being. It is enough for me to know the Lord of the house. That's just the other side of nothing matters. You could look at how to grow lotus blossom. You start out with the nothing matters. As it goes along, that's always the default position, the zero reset. And the flip side of that, just the obverse or reverse, or whatever you call it, side of that is, it is enough for me to know the Lord of the house. It's the same thing. When one first comes to nothing matters, one does not have the comfort of that is enough for me to know the Lord of the house. One has to be flying on pure faith. But that's what it reveals itself to be. It's why the black lotus on which nothing matters was written is the same as the golden lotus in which the whole of enlightenment unscrolls and unfolds within one's own heart and mind and body. Then one looks at those opposites from a different position. One looks at them from a position of compassion, not revulsion or despising or scorn, but from a position of compassion. One sees why there are the opposites. One sees where the opposites came from. One knows that they do not have the power to harm unless we give them that power through our misuse of our own will. One sees all the struggles that come out of our good intentions, the slipping into the mud and wallowing in the mud, the striving to be better. One sees it all then and sees the purity of intention that is within it all. And the fundamental unreality of both the good and the evil. And right within that unreality, there is, and shining through it, there is the true reality with a capital T and a capital R of the Eternal. So that even in the midst of the greatest struggles, the greatest difficulty, the greatest confusion, the greatest doubt, the greatest pain, the greatest grief, there we were always within the hand of the Eternal. We were always there in the hand of the Eternal. We just didn't know it. And so we did the best we could at the time in that ignorance. When we look upon the whole stream of our karma with enlightened eyes, we see not a single speck of dust. There is nothing from the first, so where can the dust alight? This is to the Buddha, this is to the Dharma, this is to the Sangha.